And it's just about the top of the hour. Ben Brown here, and you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on KTLO or KRNN. This afternoon, we've got some great guests for you, folks from the Alaska Youth Choir talking about auditions on Saturday. Steve Quinn here with details about youth hockey, the Juno Audubon Society's Saturday Berry Walk, and Connie Monroe here to highlight this weekend's celebration of the Alaska Native Sisterhood's 100th anniversary, in addition to Bird Note, Writer's Almanac, music, and more. That's A Juno Afternoon. Thanks for listening, and here's National Native News coming right up.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A fire burning on land, which includes the Spokane Indian Reservation, has scorched 36,000 acres. Steve Jackson has more on its impact on the tribe.
The fire began on the reservation and was thought to be under control until gusty winds hit the region last week, dramatically increasing the size of this fire and several others burning in Washington state. A level 2 evacuation notice was issued for the entire reservation last Friday. That designation means residents should be prepared to leave at a moment's notice if the order comes. Tribal spokeswoman Jamie Sijon says close-knit community ties should be a benefit if an actual evacuation is ordered.
People are definitely looking out for each other, especially the tribal elders. We have a tribal elder very active tribal elder program that we're watching out for those folks and the vulnerable people in our community. So I think with the evacuation, everybody has each other's back.
The fire is burning in a very rural area near some small towns. So far, 10 homes have been destroyed. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The city of St. Paul, Minnesota has established Indigenous Peoples Day. Reporter Melissa Townsend was at City Hall for the recent historic vote and has this story.
It was standing room only with about 100 people gathered in the wood-paneled city council chambers. They came to witness the vote. St. Paul City Council President Russ Stark started the proceedings.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council that the City of St. Paul shall recognize Indigenous Peoples Day on the second Monday of October.
Stark read the resolution to establish Indigenous Peoples Day.
Be it further resolved that Indigenous Peoples Day shall be used to reflect upon the ongoing struggles of Indigenous peoples on this land and to celebrate the thriving culture and value that Dakota, Ojibwe, and Indigenous nations add to our city.
Shortly after, the council voted.
A motion to approve the resolution by Mr. Tao. Roll call.
Renmo and Finney, Tao, Thune, Tolbert, Bostrom, Council President Stark. 7 in favor, none opposed. The resolution is adopted.
The effort to create Indigenous Peoples Day in St. Paul began last spring. It was led by the St. Paul Human Rights Division of the city's Department of Human Rights and Equal Economic Opportunity, and also by the Minnesota American Indian Chamber of Commerce. The Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe is a member of the chamber and played a major role in making this happen. The band owns a number of properties in the city, including 50% of all hotel rooms. Joanne White Rabbit is the executive director of the state's American Indian Chamber of Commerce. She says she thinks more Native organizations will be doing this kind of thing in cities across the country.
Because the business acumen now and the wherewithal to actually have a major impact in metropolises, if you will, and not just in the rural communities, I think you'll start to see a lot more movement.
The designation does not cancel Columbus Day, which is a federal holiday, but it creates a local focus on Indigenous people. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
Tribal leaders were among those to take part in the National Clean Energy Summit this week in Las Vegas, Nevada. Clean energy advocates, business leaders, and officials explored clean energy options. The White House announced an initiative to focus on recruiting and training Native Americans to be energy auditors. The initiative focuses on residential energy efficiency to lower energy costs for low-income households, create jobs, and improve housing conditions. Tribal leaders, law enforcement officers, victims advocates, and service providers are meeting with U.S. Justice Department officials Wednesday in Colorado. U.S. Attorney's offices from the Four Corners will be there to focus on supporting victims of crime. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
KNBA and Recover Alaska are seeking inspiring stories of recovery from alcohol addiction. If you or someone you know would like to share a story of recovery as part of an upcoming online and on-air documentary video project, go to knba.org and click Tell Your Story.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juneau afternoon. Today's Tuesday, the 25th of August. And our first guests are already here in the studio with me. I want to welcome Sarah Lewis and Amanda Blackgoat from Alaska Youth Choir to a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you ladies here. Not an easy day to be inside. It's very nice outside.
Yes.
So you were sacrificing in your capacity as devoted board members of Alaska Youth Choir.
That's right, very
so
devoted.
All you other board members out there who are slacking, having a Mai Tai on the deck.
That's right.
Just so you know. So the Alaska Youth Choir is in its 21st year.
It is. Isn't that wonderful?
It doesn't look a day over 12, being a youth choir. But if that's a wonderful thing, and even more wonderful, there's an opportunity coming up for young would-be singers or existing singers. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yes. Amanda, go ahead. Auditions are coming up.
Oh, yes. Auditions are coming up Saturday, August 29th from 9 to 4. You can call our business administrator, 789-1941. And also you could visit our Alaska Youth Choir website at www.alaskayouthchoir.com.
Okay, so they're from 9 to 4. It's pretty much the full day.
Mm-hmm. But you do need to call to get your actual audition time.
Sure. Yeah. And in addition to scheduling a time, there's probably not any sort of a fee to audition, I'm going to guess.
No.
What do singers need to prepare for the audition? How long does it go on?
They're
usually pretty quick. And we call it an audition, but really it's a placement audition. We're not going to turn anybody away. It's figuring out which choir they should be in. We've got a preparatory choir, an intermediate choir, and an advanced choir. And we may actually also have a chamber choir for older youth, depending on how much interest there is in that. That would be on a different day. But so the audition is really to kind of figure out where the child is to place them in the appropriate choir.
But everyone who comes and sings will have some appropriate place within the Alaska Youth Choir family.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, I wasn't aware that there were so many different levels of opportunity for singers, so that's something. I think, you know, I often get to hear the youth choir at events such as a gubernatorial inauguration, the Chamber of Commerce Dinner. So that's probably the advanced choir that gets to go and do that kind of performance.
Not always, because those prep choirs are really cute.
Okay. There's the adorableness factor.
There's that, too. And also, performing is one of the parts of the program. Missouri Smythe, who is our artistic director, she feels very strongly about performing because that's something that actually adds to the skills that all of the youth have, as well as all of the singing skills. But being able to perform in front of other people and be part of the community in that way is very important to our program. So we actually start that off right at prep choir. They start performing.
Well, that makes perfect sense because, you know, if you waited to get somebody out in front of an audience after they'd just been said, no, you stay in the back, you're not ready, that can almost increase the pressure for that final performance date. Mm-hmm. So building in a little thick skin at a younger age is a great idea.
That's right.
As a performer myself, it makes perfect sense to me.
Desensitize them to an audience,
So the auditions will happen this Saturday, and folks, again, need to call the office or go online, figure out a time, make sure they get that specific time allotment. And then when will they hear back about which choir is good, and then what's the process after that? When do rehearsals start, and if anything that's going to be coming up this season?
So rehearsals start September 15th. They will be on Tuesdays from 5 to 7:30.
Depending on what choir you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then chamber choir, if we do have one, will probably be on twice a month, probably meeting on a Sunday.
Yeah. And where are the rehearsals for the choirs?
Chapel by the Lake in the log cabin.
Okay, oh, great. That's a wonderful space acoustically, and there's lots of parking, and it's nice.
Yeah. And we actually, I'm going to go ahead and do a thank you to Chapel by the Lake because they actually give us this space free of charge, and we also sometimes do performances there where they give us lower rates. It's really a great relationship with Chapel by the Lake.
Absolutely. And so that's where the rehearsals are. It's kind of centrally located for all the Juneau residents. Now, you both have had some participants in the choir before.
Yes.
Anything you want to share that was a favorite moment you've had that really makes you believe in this wonderful enterprise?
when I would call, I got a call from my daughter one time, and she was saying she was having a hard time. And I said, oh, okay, so think of your favorite song. And she did, and she's like, all right, I can do this. And she sang it, and she was able to go through. And I wasn't there. I wasn't able to be with her at the time when she was having this hard time. And it was song. Sometimes now, can mend a lot of things.
Well, she just used her telephonic lifeline, called her mom. And
right.
But, I mean, I think what you did was embrace the idea that music is that important. It can be that transformative.
It can be.
It really can. And one of the things that we feel is important for having youth choir here in town is that right now there are no choral programs in the middle schools. A couple of the grade schools, they all have great music programs, but I don't think they all have choirs, but there are a couple of choirs in the grade schools, and then there's a great choir program in the high school. But that in-between time, and what I found, the experience for my daughter, who started when she was 6, and she's going to hopefully be in the chamber choir at 15 now, is that it really was one of those programs that was able to help her bridge the gap between all these different ages that you go through, all the different schools that she's gone through. She's been able to bridge those by remaining in youth choir. It's part of her identity.
Mm-hmm.
And singing, because of that, has also become part of her identity as well.
And she maybe it's also a bridge between different artistic media.
You know,
if you're or even any activity as a youth. You know, if you're not sure if you really like sports more or acting or debate, but then choir having part of the mix and not having it drop out for those middle school years is quite important.
Yeah.
Thanks to Alaska Youth Choir for helping meet that need in the Juneau School District.
Our pleasure.
Well, wonderful. So, again, tell us, just in case folks are tuning into a Juneau Afternoon, how they can go about securing a placement audition time for their young person for any of the choir levels available with Alaska Youth Choir.
Sure. So call Amy, who's our business administrator, at 789-1941. And you can set up, you can figure out the time for the audition, or you can go to our website, www.alaskayouthchoir.com, to get more information, but you'll still need to call Amy, so you might as well just give her a call.
All right, that sounds like a plan. And are there other ways, I mean, when there are concerts and performances throughout the year, are there other ways that people can support the Alaska Youth Choir? Are there fundraising schemes, silent auctions?
Yes. So we do need a few board members, so that's something that would be really, really helpful, because having that kind of community support is important. We have concerts. We have one in December, March, and May. Coming to those helps us a lot because you're, you know, paying for your tickets and such. We do have raffles. You'll see us, our kids out there doing all that kind of stuff. So, yes, please, anytime you can support us, we'd be grateful.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, good. Well, thank you so much, Sarah Lewis, Amanda Blackgoat, on behalf of the Board of Directors of Alaska Youth Choir, whose auditions for young singers are coming up this Saturday from 9 to 4. Go to their website or call them up and secure a time and come to their concerts and buy a raffle ticket, of course, as always.
That's right. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks again, Sarah and Amanda.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 25th of August, 2015. It was on this day in 1718 French immigrants founded the city of New Orleans, named for Philippe II, the Duke of Orleans. The French had claimed the territory in 1682, and they sent a starter population of prisoners, slaves, and bonded servants, arriving in New Orleans to find a swamp with a lot of mosquitoes, surrounded by hostile Indians prone to hurricanes. The French then sent 90 female convicts straight from the Paris jails, chaperoned by a group of nuns until they could be married off to the men who were waiting there for them. Two engineers laid out plans for the original walled village, which then came to be called the French Quarter. It became an American city in 1803. It's the birthday of the poet Charles Wright, Pickwick Dam, Tennessee, 1935, went off to Davidson College, joined the army, was stationed in Italy, and there he read a poem by Ezra Pound, Blandula Tanula Vagula, set in the part of Italy where Wright was stationed, and that inspired him to start writing poems. It's the birthday of the novelist Martin Amis, born Oxford, England, 1949, author of the novels Money, London Fields, The Information, and others. Martin Amis, who said, "Nothing compares with the fluidity of longhand. You shift things around without shifting them around, in that you merely indicate a possibility while your original thought is still there. The trouble with a computer is that what you come out with has no memory, no provenance, no history. And it's the birthday of Leonard Bernstein, born in Lawrence, Massachusetts, 1918. He was 40 when he became the musical director of the New York Philharmonic. Wrote On the Town and West Side Story, the operetta Candide, symphonies, scores for ballets. Leonard Bernstein conducted his final performance at Tanglewood in 1990, in August, and the following Christmas, just before he died at the age of 72, he conducted Beethoven's Ninth in Berlin to celebrate the crumbling of the Berlin Wall. Here's a poem for today by Tom Hennen, From a Country Overlooked. There are no creatures you cannot love. A frog calling at God from the moon-filled ditch as you stand on the country road in the June night. The sound is enough to make the stars weep with happiness. In the morning, the landscape green is lifted off the ground by the scent of grass. The day is carried across its hours without any effort by the shining insects that are living their secret lives. The space between the prairie horizons makes us ache with its beauty. Cottonwood leaves click in an ancient tongue to the farthest cold dark in the universe. The cottonwood also talks to you of breeze and speckled sunlight. You are at home in these great empty places, along with red-winged blackbirds and sloughs. You are comfortable in this spot, so full of grace and being that it sparkles like jewels spilled on water. A poem by Tom Hennen, From a Country Overlooked, from his collection Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's about 18 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon, Tuesday, the 25th of August. I'm accustomed to being here on Mondays, but I'm here on a very sunny and beautiful Tuesday. And our next guests are two gentlemen here on behalf of Juno Youth Hockey. So Steve and Matt, Welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time that you guys give us. And also, kudos to your newsroom. They are very generous in posting slideshows of our photos depicting what not just youth hockey, but adult hockey, high school hockey, figure skating, all the activities that go on at the rink. And the rink is just a tremendous community asset. And this Saturday, I think you're going to see that with the Juno Douglas Ice Association's Learn to Play. And it's for kids who have never been on the ice or have seldomly been on the ice. And they get to work with coaches, and they get to work with teenage kids who have come up through the system and learned to play. And either way, they get to see how fun hockey can be. And there will be people there early to help them with their gear. So we recommend that if they're interested, it's from 3:30 to 5:30. They can get there between 2:30 and 3:30, and people will help them with their gear and show them a good time on the ice.
And so this is, again, the Juno Douglas Ice Association?
Juno Douglas Ice Association, JDIA.
JDIA, and Learn to Play. It's going to be over at the Treadwell Arena.
Yes.
There behind Savico Park over in Douglas.
Correct.
Familiarly known as Sandy Beach. And so is this the first year that the Ice Association has done Learn to Play as an outreach thing to create new hockey talent in the community?
No, I can't remember when we started it, but it's been several years now
okay.
that we've been doing this. And so usually What happens is we have a little gear swap and introduction, you know, learn to play hockey, and a lot of coaches and current and past players will be on the ice helping them out and helping get equipment on and stuff. It's just, it's kind of an all-in-one hockey 101, I guess.
Well, because it's for beginners, and some of these are going to be little guys and potentially girls, if they don't have their own gear, will there be something there to put on them so that they are a little bit protected as they make their first foray out onto the ice?
We have plenty of gear for them.
Okay.
And we have people there to help them put on the gear.
Okay.
And those same people will also help them on the ice.
Okay, so it's a start-to-finish coaching process.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And you had mentioned boys and maybe girls. Definitely girls.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how many girls are playing hockey.
We have girls who are some of the best players in Juneau.
Good.
One right now was so good in growing up here in Juneau playing hockey. She is going to join a team in New Hampshire.
Which
while
is
going to high school.
And that's a high school in New Hampshire.
It's a high school age team. It's a team separate from high school, but she will be playing out there. She's that good. We have another girl who's going to play at a high school in New England, in Connecticut. So the girls that are playing in Juneau or have played in Juneau are exceptionally good. And they can have just as much fun as the boys.
Right. Well, Steve, when you and I were at high school, it was less frequent to see girls playing sports like hockey, here in Alaska at least. And, you know, there might be one, you know, even my soccer team when I was a kid, there was only one girl out. But that was, you know, in the early 80s. So it was a very long time ago. So that's great to hear that it's truly, you know, just a fully embraced for both boys and girls to get out there and learn how to do this. And they all get to participate together. Now, Matt, you mentioned, like, the concept of a gear swap. And so people are going to be coming to this who might have gear that no longer fits them, and they kind of want to move it on to someone that it might fit and look for some that might fit them from other people.
Yeah, and then we also have rental gear available for all the intro. We have an intro to hockey program that once we kick the season off on September 14th that week, every Saturday morning we'll have our intro to hockey program, which is an hour long, and it's geared towards all kids starting out playing hockey, but a lot of them end up being 4 to 5 years old, and we have rental gear available for all those kids for a small fee, and they get most of their money back at the end of the year.
Okay, so it's more of a deposit than a big rental.
Yeah. They put down a $100 deposit, and they get $75 back at the end of the year.
Okay, and that, of course, goes to underwrite some of the other great work that's being done. So this is an outreach program kind of designed to again, as I said earlier, build capacity, build talent for the sport of hockey in Juneau. Is there a pipeline? Has it been going on long enough to be feeding people into the adult hockey leagues that exist here?
Not quite.
Okay, but you're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's starting, though. You know, last year on my adult team, I had 6 kids that I coached in Juneau that were on my adult team with me, and it was kind of refreshing to have, it seems like I've been here since the rink opened, and I seem to always have been in the younger crowd, and now all of a sudden there's a new younger crowd, which is kind of refreshing.
Well, it shows what an important community asset the Treadwell Ice Arena is, and that it is being fully used to the point where it's become sort of an intergenerational thing, that people are spending quality time together and passing the experience down next to those younger.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. One of the nice things about our program is we are attracting interest from instructors and camps from out of state who want to come here and conduct their camps. And one was done 2 weeks ago by the Rocky Mountain Hockey School.
Mm-hmm.
And what the way that helps us is it saves travel money for kids who want to attend a camp. The camp comes here. And part of that is underwritten by the City and Borough of Juneau's Youth Activities Grant.
Mm-hmm.
We have another instructor coming. Her name is Kim Muir, and she'll be here in September. She's doing all ages. And she'll do 4 sessions per night for the youth, the high school, and the adults separately. And Kim Muir is known really well in the lower 48, particularly the Midwest, for her work coaching players that are now in the NHL or coaching them while they've been in the NHL. And her camp is called Can't Skate, Can't Play, meaning if you don't know how to skate, you're not going to play very well.
And don't just rush straight into trying to hit the puck and check the other guy, but really be nimble on your feet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that obviously makes a great deal of sense. It's really not safe if people don't know how to skate very well. And I've only, you know, played informally on the ice rink outside my school up in Anchorage and Palmer when I was a boy. But, yeah, it seemed like knowing how to skate was a really, really good idea.
Yeah.
So the Juneau Douglas Ice Association has been in existence for a while doing this. Are there other ways that people can learn more about the association, its activities, and find ways to support it and its work here in Juneau?
Absolutely.
Is there a website?
Yeah, you can visit our website, jdiahockey.com. And we've got all kinds of our schedule on there, supporters of our events, pictures. But it's a good go-to source for parents just wanting to know a little bit more. And they can go right to that website. And again, it's jdiahockey.com.
And so they could get the information about this Saturday's upcoming Learn to Play there, 3:30 to 5:30 at the Treble Ice Arena. But you should arrive early to have time to put on gear. But there's probably information about other things coming up over the rest of the season on the website, too.
Yeah, like the start of the season, the Kim Muir Hockey Clinic, the high school season coming up after that, and then the game schedules are all up there. So.
But there's no need to pre-register for Learn to Play this Saturday. Just show up and show up early and be part of what's going on?
Correct.
Precisely.
Excellent. Well, Steve and Matt, I want to thank you both very much for being here on behalf of the Juneau Douglas Ice Association. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before you dash back out into that sun? Or maybe you're going right back inside. I don't know.
No, thank you so much for your time on this.
Okay, well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, thank you, Matt. You guys have a great day.
is bird note. Late August is a fine time to walk the ocean beach. Weather's growing mild. Gulls jabber overhead. Waves gently lap the sand. But look out to sea. If your eyes could take you beyond the horizon, you would see an astonishing scene. A vast migration is taking place. Offshore, over the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, millions of seabirds are on the move. Most are heading south, migrating past the U.S. coastlines in August and September. Fierce, predatory jaegers that nested on the Arctic tundra are flying south to winter on tropical oceans. Arctic terns and skuas are departing on an epic journey, flying all the way to Antarctic waters. Shearwaters in the tens of millions leave northern oceans to nest in the southern hemisphere, many near New Zealand. Even puffins bid farewell to their shoreline nesting cliffs now, scattering widely across the open ocean for the winter. Meanwhile, back on the beach with the warm August sand between our toes, we relax. We squint out into the distant blue. Above the glimmering sea, is that a single shearwater we see, tipping above the horizon? A straggler, maybe? And a clue to that immense migration taking place just beyond our sight.
And it's 32 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and it's a Juno afternoon, this Tuesday, the 25th of August. And with me now is Brenda Wright from the Board of Directors of the Juno Audubon Society. Welcome, Brenda, to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you very much.
And as I've said to all my guests, I have to say to you, you're very kind to share some time inside away from the sun on an afternoon as lovely as this.
I know. It's for a very good cause.
It is for a good cause. And it's about getting outdoors later this week when the forecast isn't bad. But we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Saturday Wild is coming up, thanks to the Juno Audubon Society, this Saturday, the 29th. Tell us about it and how people can participate.
Well, a lot of folks in Juneau don't actually realize that you can go outside and pick wild blueberries here, and they're totally edible. They're actually a little bit tart because they're wild, and if you pick them closer to where the sun is, the edges of the muskegs, then they're more likely to be a little sweeter, just a little. But we want to let you discover the wild berries that we have here. And the best place to do that right now is up at Eagle Crest, because for sure they're the last things to bloom and the last to fruit. And so we know for sure that there'll be plenty of berries for everyone who would like to come and explore the slopes up there and pick berries.
So Saturday Wild is going to be this Saturday up at Eagle Crest.
Yes, we'll meet at 10 a.m. at the lodge parking lot. And please dress for the weather, and, you know, even if it's Juno weather, whatever, but please bring waterproof shoes, because the berries are, they like water. And so for sure your feet will get wet without waterproof shoes.
And even if it's been sunny for a few days, anyone who's been here and gone outside, even this summer, will know. It's certainly this summer, because we've had such a variance between lovely, intense precipitation and beautiful days. But it takes a little while for the muskeg to dry out.
Yes, quite a long time, actually. That's part of the reason it's a muskeg.
And if you wear espadrilles, you will lose a shoe and have to go home barefoot.
Yes, indeed.
So, and the reason I say that is I've actually more than once seen people at the top of Mount Roberts who've worn espadrilles up there, but they don't know. They're getting on a tram. There's no sign that says no espadrilles, so maybe there should be. So, Eagle Crest was a beloved blueberry picking area before the road went in. Yes. And I think the last time I was up there picking blueberries was that long ago. What route does everyone just scatter and go wherever they want, or do you guys go part up the mountain as a group and then diversify? How does that work out?
Well, that's a great question, because I wanted to make sure that everybody knows it's fine to bring children, ages of all sorts.
Mm-hmm.
We will be going up the Bunny Hill. That slope I checked out just recently, and I know for sure there's lots of berries there, so we'll have a nice dry path to go uphill, and then we'll have some little cheat sheets that'll have the 7 or 8 different kinds of berries that are most edible and possibly to be found this time of year, and we'll share those with everyone that comes. And then we'll go and actually pick some berries so you can taste and see what the wild ones taste like.
So it's not just a random go out and grab whatever you see that looks blue. There's an educational component as well.
Yes, because, you know, unfortunately for us, half the red berries in the forest are actually poison.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that people understand understand the difference between the non-poison and the poison, or just please don't put red things in your mouth.
Right, yeah, because currants are lovely, but they are harder to find than baneberries or a lot of other things. They're just sitting there waiting, to harm you.
Waiting for you to grab them and think they're delicious.
So the Saturday Wild Berry Picking festivities this weekend are going to be on the Porcupine Slope, which is the Bunny Hill, as you said, mm-hmm. just behind the new education facility.
Yes. Uh-huh.
If people feel like they're already expert berry pickers, they could also come up and go up sort of to Cropley Lake or wherever, and there are berries up there too,
Yeah, the Cropley Lake path is extremely good this fall, summer.
Excellent. Yeah, that's right. Freudian slip there. And, of course, berry picking may be getting close to over at lower altitudes, but up there it's really kind of the peak season for us.
Yes, it is very much so. And so please bring your own container if you'd like to bring some home. And you'll be reassured that not only do they taste good, but they're safe to eat.
Excellent. Now, I do have to ask, based on my prior experience picking blueberries here in Juneau, about the little white creature factor and salinated water as a means of removing the little white creatures. What if any wisdom can you share with our listeners about that unique aspect of being a blueberry harvester here in Juneau?
The larva that's produced by a wasp infecting the flower, that's almost as big as the berry. And luckily for us, the berry is usually quite soft and squishy, and so if you touch one that's not quite the right texture, you can just drop that instead of putting it in your bag. And there's two other methods that's quite easy to get rid of them. You can just put them in a plastic bag overnight, all your berries, and the bugs will crawl out. Or you can actually just freeze the berries, and it'll be quite obvious which ones are not edible after that.
Okay. But then the other method I mentioned, more laborious, and if you're sodium insensitive, it may not work so well, is you mix up some salt water and put them in, and they'll float out pretty quickly.
Yes.
And then you can just skim them off the top.
Yes.
But even if you do it that way, you have to look for the ones that look kind of, puffy and mottled, that the bear, so nothing came out of, but it looks like you might not want to eat that anyway.
That's correct.
Okay, good. Well, so excellent. I just wanted to make sure, in the interest of full disclosure, we mentioned that element of the lovely process of berry gathering. So I think I may have asked you what time, but again, there's people need to drive themselves up to Eagle Crest. What time will this get started, and how long will it go on for?
Well, it's going to start at 10 a.m. We'll have all of our information there, so you know which berries are safe to pick and what they look like, and then we'll walk up the hill together. After that, you can stay as long as you like. The leaders will probably leave around after about 2 hours. But if you care to stay and pick because you're really enjoying the taste of the berries, please do. It's a public place.
Oh, very good. And of course, Eagle Crest is a place we need to continue to use in hopes that we're going to have a great winter time of use up there this year.
Yes, indeed.
So the Juneau Audubon Society is sponsoring this. It's not directly related to appreciating birds, but people will probably see quite a few while they're up there. What other, if any, activities might you want to mention about the Juneau Audubon Society while you are here on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because we have another Saturday Wild coming up in September, and it's based on wild mushrooms. And it's been so very, very popular the last 3 years that our leader, Dave Gregovich, has asked us to make it into a slightly smaller group. So I'm going to put an address on the webpage, and anyone that would like to attend one on September 19th or 26th, they're free. They will also be on Douglas Island. You need to call or email and sign up, because we're not going to have 55 people at one gathering this time. It's going to be a smaller group, and so all you have to do is sign up, and then you can find out where and when it will be.
Excellent. And, of course, you've broken it into two weekends, so you can accommodate two smaller, more manageable groups.
That's correct.
Now, one similarity, of course, between going out and picking berries and going out and picking mushrooms is you need to know what you're picking, what's edible, what's poisonous. And will that be part of the mushroom gathering wild days?
Yes, that's the most important part. We do, as a part of the mushroom walk, we will go out and gather almost anything that we can see that is safe for us to pick up and bring it back to our expert. And then we'll discuss the reasons why we won't eat many of them, because we don't know for sure what they are.
Because there are a lot of doppelganger mushroom species.
Yes, there are some that are very similar to edibles, and so you never want to mix those up.
Right. Shaggy mane. There's even one for the common, I think, that looks a little bit like a common shaggy mane, like you see above in the medians of Egan Drive. And, of course, you can get them from Egan Drive, but there may be car stuff on them if you get them from there.
Yeah, you wouldn't want those.
Yeah. Okay, good. So berries, mushrooms, Alaska's Great Outdoors, brought to you courtesy of the Juneau Audubon Society. I want to thank Brenda Wright, who's a board member. And, again, this Saturday Wild, just one more time for listeners, how they can pick some berries and learn more about them this coming weekend.
10 a.m. meet at the Eagle Crest parking lot. Free and all ages are welcome.
All right. Thank you very much, Brenda. I hope you have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Saturday, August 29th, the Diamond Park Aquatic Center will be hosting the annual Race Back to School Triathlon for children in grades 1 through 5. Check-in is at 8 a.m. with the race beginning at 9 a.m. and entails a 50-yard swim, 1-mile bike ride, and half-mile run. Registration materials available at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. More information at 586-2782.
And it's about 12 minutes before the hour on Tuesday, the 25th of August, and it's a Juno afternoon. And I'm Ben Brown, and our guests now this afternoon on a Juno afternoon are Connie Monroe and Percy Coons, and I want to welcome you ladies to a Juno afternoon today.
Good afternoon.
So you are here to help our listeners learn more about the recognition dinner celebrating the leadership partnership of two great organizations, the Alaska Native Sisterhood and the Filipino Community Incorporated. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, Connie, tell us first, please, if you would, about what the recognition dinner is going to be.
Because the Alaska Native Sisterhood is 100 years old, we went back, and I'm a member of Camp 2, and so is Percy. We went back and looked at Kim's book and the history of our organization. And it was real wonderful to read that about 30 of the Native women mentioned in the book were married to Filipinos. So we got Thelma's book in hand, of which I have had, and it's been on the shelf a bit. And we went through that, and it was really wonderful to see the two groups have something in writing that we can look back on and see the names and the activities that they did together in Juneau and Southeast, but mainly Juneau.
Okay, so the two books you're talking about, Kim Metcalf wrote the book ANS Camp Number 2. You're holding up a lovely copy of it, The Sisterhood, it's called, and that had a lot of pictures in that book. And then there's another book by Thelma Buchholz, who was the first Filipino member of the Alaska legislature, I think, and Filipinos in Alaska, 1788 to 1958. So two really interesting original Alaskan history books written by women, Alaskan women, and so that's the genesis of the idea. Percy, you've got the poster in your hands. Do you want to tell folks who are listening some of the specifics about the event? Because I think people are going to be eager to know how they can get tickets and participate.
Okay, partners in history, standing together in sisterhood with Filipino Community Incorporated, please join us at a recognition dinner celebrating the leadership partnership of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and the Filipino Community Incorporated. On Saturday, August 29th, 2015, 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Filipino Community Hall. $15 per ticket. And for tickets Do I need to put all this?
You can get them at the door.
Oh, people can get them at the door, but if they want to get them in advance, can they do that too?
Yes, they
yes.
can.
Excellent. And so Filipino-Americans have played a lot of important roles all across this country, but in Alaska, the Filipino community is particularly strong and vibrant. And I guess I knew, having lived in the Southeast for a while, that there was a large overlap with the Alaska Native community, but this really highlights this in a very specific way, doesn't it, Connie?
Yes, it is. It's amazing to be able to work with the new younger board that I have not met before and been active with. So it's really a whole new thing for the next generation to look at the history. And one of the tasks that we all had is to find our first presidents. And so they had a lot of work to do to determine, well, who was the first president of the Filipino community? And, of course, we were very fortunate. Rosa Miller's mother, Bessie Visaya, was the first president for Camp 2. And Camp 70 hasn't really been voted on who exactly is their president. So Camp 70 will be our partners in this, too. And we'll start out our activity with Grand ANS President Frida Westman, who will talk a little bit about 100 years and the Juno organizations and how they started. So we're really excited to have her do our keynote. And during that whole process and dinner, you'll go and have a wonderful Filipino dinner. There'll be all kinds of great things happening, including dances.
Okay.
And Percy, you talk about that.
Oh, so Percy, tell us about the... And I was going to ask you about the food. I was already thinking lumpia.
Yeah.
So, but tell us about the entertainment at the recognition dinner, please.
The Filipino ladies are going to do a song,
a welcome dance.
And what was our part of our Juno Clinket dancers, of which I was the song leader, it's going to be Ed Coons, myself, Percy Coons, Mickey Coons, and Nellie Coons, and we'll do a welcome, traditional welcome.
So there'll be both a Clinket welcome and a Filipino welcome for all the folks who come.
Yes.
Excellent. So this sounds like a really wonderful event. If $15 is a really good price for a wonderful dinner, is it going to sell out? Do people need to think about getting tickets in advance, or is that a concern?
So far, we haven't sold out. I have 15 left right in my purse.
Okay, so if you see Connie anytime later today, you can just get one directly from her. Okay.
Right, and they can call me at 586-3694, and I'd be glad to deliver them if you're not too far away and I can find the street.
There you go. So Connie Monroe will hand-deliver tickets to the Filipino Community Alaska Native Sisterhood Recognition Dinner. That's going to be this Saturday, the 29th, and it's going to be at... Percy, tell me again the time. 6 o'clock, I think?
5:30.
I'm glad I asked. 5:30 to 8 at the Filipino Community Hall.
Yes.
Well, so ladies, thank you so much for coming on a Juno afternoon. I hope that you have a wonderful crowd this weekend at the dinner. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners before we sign off this afternoon?
Well, you want to talk about the menu, lumpia.
Yes, okay. Let's
chicken
get...
adobo,
mm-hmm.
rice, salad, and we couldn't get Costco cakes because they don't have them anymore. So we're going to have a traditional fresh fruit cup with whipped cream, and of course coffee, tea, something to drink. So it's really an effort together just to celebrate locally.
Absolutely, and it's a brilliant sounding menu, I'll tell you that, and it sounds like it's going to be a very good time. So Percy Coons and Connie Monroe, thank you both very much for coming on a Juno afternoon. Go and enjoy the sunshine, and I hope you have a wonderful dinner this weekend.
Thank you.
Alaska Community Action on Toxics, YWCA, and Alaska Run for Women invite everyone to a free lecture, What the Pink? Protecting the Breasts You Love. A national panel of experts will teach you about the science linking toxic chemicals and breast cancer and what you can do about it. Attend on September 3rd at the Jack, beginning at 6:30 p.m. For more information, visit akaction.org.